You're listening to Sports Tech Feed, the global sports technology podcast.
Hello and welcome to Sports Tech Feed. I'm your host, Thomas Lomes. Great to have you join us again this week. On today's show, we have the final of our sessions recorded at the inaugural Sports Innovation Summit, a new event held last month in Nashville, Tennessee at Neesan Stadium, home of the Tennessee Titans. The summit is a joint venture between the team here at SDWS and our friends at HDX Sports Tech. It's a forum for exploring the most pressing issues facing the sports industry today, from the latest technological advancements to new ways to engage fans and drive revenue. As you'll hear, the summit covers a wide range of topics, but with a particular focus on meaningful and actionable insights. Dates and locations for the 2024 edition of the summit will be released soon, so make sure you subscribe to our Sports Tech Feed newsletter via the link in the show description or at stws.co. For our Asia-Pacific-based listeners, we encourage you to attend the Australia Sports Tech Conference, the Southern Hemisphere's largest and most respected sports technology industry event. This year's edition is happening on Thursday, August 31st in Brisbane, Queensland. Agenda, tickets and more information is available at stws.co. Now over to our expert guests on revenue generation strategies in the digital age, with a particular focus towards the end on sports betting, one of the hottest topics in the US sports ecosystem. Thanks again for listening.
Revenue generation strategies in the digital age. So on stage, I have Dan Healy, founder and CEO of FanPower, and Jeremy Jones, CRO of NVenue. So if you guys could outline a little bit about yourselves, what you're responsible for, and then we'll fire into the questions.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Past 12 years of my career, I've been in the sports and live entertainment industry, selling anything from season tickets, half-season tickets, luxury suites, VIP memberships, you name it, everything in between. My role now as Chief Revenue Officer at NVenue is to really grow our brand, focusing on now the sports betting landscape, selling our real-time predictive analytics into the sports betting operators of the world. And we also have we use that same tech to utilize our team partnerships and on the media side as well that I'll touch a little bit on here in a sec, but that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, my background, I'm Dan Healy. I'm the founder and CEO of FanPower. My background is not in sport, actually. It's in consumer technology. I built my first company when I was in college. I went to Ohio State and started an online food ordering service back in 2005. And then in 2010, I built a company called Prolific Interactive. If you remember 2010, mobile apps were new, but the majority of mobile apps were primarily marketing apps. What we recognized was you could create revenue-generating apps. So we built everything from Lilly Pulitzer to Abercrombie, Gap, Sephora, Amex, BlackRock. I sold that in 2019 to WeWork, and I was working on this company, which originally was called Pickup and now is called FanPower. And the thesis behind this really comes from the shift that was created by the repeal of PASPA. So when PASPA was repealed, you could look at the betting opportunity, which a lot of companies have and have done an incredible job in. I didn't know that space, and I knew you had to know that space very, very well to get into it. And so instead, what we looked at was the consumer component. How are the fans going to interact with sports now that there is this legislation, which has changed the culture and ultimately the conversation? And what we recognized was that we could help leagues, teams, and media companies make all of their content interactive through polling widgets, QR codes, and position these questions that fans have an opinion on. And as a result, the fan interacts, gets to see whether or not they're correct, typically wins something, joins a loyalty program, whatever it might be. And on the league or team side, they collect first and zero party data. And that has now evolved into a platform that creates AI-generated content, AI-generated questions, collects this data, and directly integrates it into the CRM or CDP of our customers. It's been a very interesting journey, and it's a really fun time, I think, in sports. I think we joined sports at the right time.
Yeah, that's for sure. So we're going to talk about fan engagement a lot. I mean, the topic of this is monetization, revenue generation, but underpinning a lot of that is fan engagement. So that can sometimes be a overused, amorphous term. I think it said so much that it can lose its meaning. So starting off as well, how do you define that?
Yeah, I think it's finding the balance of personalization and giving the fans an option of how they want to engage within their sport. I think right now we live in, as sports fans, there is not a better time right now to be sports fans, right? We sit at home and we're on our new 70-inch TV. It is the biggest and brightest thing. We're sitting there on our couch and we feel like we're practically there. Or we have tickets and we go to a game. We're now going to these state-of-the-art arenas that we're getting experiences like never before. So fan engagement is here, but how do we take that and personalize it? I think that's how we really are going to define fan engagement. I think one prime example is on Amazon Prime, Thursday Night Football. When you watch Thursday Night Football, you have multiple options of how you want to consume the sport, right? You can watch on their normal broadcast or switch over to another altcast and watch more of their skeleton view where you're focusing on analytics and data. Or if you're more of a casual fan and you want to switch over and watch Thursday Night Football through Dude Perfect, that is giving the fan an option of how they want to consume their favorite sport. So I think that's the direction that we're starting to go, is giving the fans, hey, yes, I'm watching it on now, which nowadays is everything headed towards streaming, giving the fan the options of how they want to engage in their sport. And I think that's really how we're going to define fan engagement here in the future.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. We think about it in two different ways. One, the tactical component, fan engagement. How do you actually get people to interact with your content, your product being on the field, on the court, on the TV? And then the other side of it, fan engagement to us really means understanding how your fans feel. If you can create a mechanism not just to track transactional data, you know, there were a lot of conversations today on kind of having an immense amount of data, and it's all incredibly important, incredibly powerful. But if you understand how your fans feel, if they're telling you what they're thinking, what they've done, what they want next, then it can power your roadmap and can probably start to solve some of the challenges that are eroding when we think about, you know, no more RSNs and streaming services and the expense that it costs to go to a real live game and all of those things. And so when we think about fan engagement, it's as simple as that, understanding how your fans feel.
So we talked about that earlier today with the proliferation of data and being able to capture so much information about fans, but there's certain issues that are being faced with data collection. Think about a cookie-less world, potentially down there, issues of privacy, things like that. Everyone kind of wanting to gatekeep what they have, social media platforms being walled gardens and not wanting to let those fans into other environments. So, I mean, back to Dan's, what are some of the issues that you're seeing there with actually being able to know and understand your fan?
Yeah, so a gentleman on a panel earlier today talked about building a relationship with the fan. I believe it was the American, the Flag Football League, and I think that is more important today than it ever was, and it's going to be more important tomorrow than it is today. When you brought up a cookie-less world, right? A cookie-less world should be a very, very scary thing for marketers. If you do not know that I went to the Nets site, and if you are not now tracking me across and showing me where I can watch that Nets game or encouraging me to buy Nets merchandise or a ticket, you are missing out on a conversion opportunity. And so there has to be a new way to understand that profile, that 360-degree, you know, fan profile. And a lot of that is going to be through engagement mechanisms where the fan is telling you what they care about. Now that I don't live in Brooklyn anymore, it might be kind of difficult, and I'm not a season ticket holder anymore, it might be kind of difficult to know that I am a Nets fan, but I am, and they're tracking me across the internet. When that mechanism is gone, then where do I go? Because they don't, you know, they lose me ultimately. And so it's a major challenge that I think leagues and teams need to be thinking a lot harder about today. And I think we're starting to see some progress, right? Like last year when I was talking to a league, there were 20 people on the call because nobody knew who was supposed to be talking to me. And this year there are two people. One is in charge of first party data collection. The other is in charge of monetization of that data. So you're starting to see some progress.
So, and in terms of, so realizing that there is a problem and there needs to be a solution in terms of how you actually go out to these fans and you track them and all that kind of stuff and you engage with them in the sense of engaging as a two-way street, you know, you reach out to them with something that of value they have, whether that's, you know, highlights, sports betting, we're going to talk about that, but something that they want to interact with, and then out of that you get information about them that you can then kind of pump into the cycle. I mean, what is some of the, for say in venue, what is some of that stuff, that give and take, what are you giving fans that they're really engaging with in terms of data, and maybe speak to about real time, like in how that works.
Yeah. Forgive me, I didn't really give an introduction of what NVenue is. So NVenue, we're a real-time predictive analytics machine learning AI company. So we get the data from the field. We're partners with both Sportradar and Genius. Genius is the official provider of NFL. Sportradar is the official provider of NBA, MLB, and NHL. So we receive millions of historical data points from the field. We put that into our machine learning, and it's all machine learning AI. Our CEO was at Hewitt and Packard for over 20 years leading predictive weather patterns for the United States. So we have a core tech team that's building out these models. And to give you an idea, one of our partners is Apple TV. So if you've ever watched an Apple TV Friday night baseball game, you would see our real-time predictive analytics on screen at the bottom right hand of the screen. So just to give you an idea, you turn on Apple TV, Aaron Judge comes up to bat. Our machines are saying, with this millions of historical data points that Aaron Judge, they choose what to put on screen. We give them multiple markets what to put on screen. They try to make sense with it. So Aaron Judge comes up to bat, everyone's thinking home run, right? So they'll show home run probability on screen at the bottom right. Our pitch is thrown. It is now an 0-1 count, say. Our machines update that in real time using the millions of historical data points. And now, say it's at an 0-0 count, it's he has a 7% chance of hitting a home run. Our machines spit that out, and then it will show on screen in under a millisecond. Now at an 0-1 count, he might have a 5% chance of hitting a home run. So that is all in real time. And what this is doing is this is capturing the fans' attention in real time. I think we're done talking about what just happened, like in baseball, the exit velocity or what was the speed of this player that just ran in the match. The future is what's up and coming, what's happening next. You know, we've always bet in the moment, going back, if we're in a group text and we're talking about, hey, I'm a Cowboys fan, you're an Eagles fan. Hey, I bet you dinner tonight the Eagles are going to miss this 50-yard field goal. Or I bet you Aaron Judge hits a home run at this at bat. We can now do that at scale using our tech. So Apple TV was the first one to put our real-time predictive analytics on screen. And then also with our partnership, we just partnered with the NBA. They wanted to find a way to keep their fans engaged throughout the whole game. So our partnership with them is we took that data of the NBA and their knowledge of how their fans watch, what their fans want to bet on. And the first thing we built was a race to 15 micro bet. Soon as the tip-off happens, which team is going to be the first to score 15? They put that on NBA League Pass throughout the finals. So everyone that had League Pass was able to open their phone, engage with which team is going to be the next to score 15. Soon as that race to 15 was over, what's the next? Who's going to be the next to score 15? That one micro bet, which was not real money, it was free to play that their fans could engage with. That one bet, the data that we got back from the NBA was tremendous. They saw that we were keeping their fans engaged on average 20 minutes longer on League Pass, just engaging with which team's going to be the next to score 15. So that's really the future of where we're headed towards, again, is talking about what's about to happen. And using our tech as we get integrated into the sports betting realm is you're going to be able to soon bet on what is going to happen at this next pitch. Fastball or curveball, I'm putting 10 bucks on this next at bat is going to end in a strikeout. What's going to happen on this next possession in football? It's going to end in a touchdown. A Dak's going to throw a 10-yard pass to CeeDee Lamb. What's going to happen at this free throw? Is Steph Curry going to make or miss this free throw? So it's never been this tech is fairly new in the past couple years, and with what we're building, we're creating that fan experience that you're going to be able to bet on every next play.
And so that's all underpinned by technology, because obviously humans wouldn't have the capacity in that speed to be able to update the odds on that and draw in all that information. So, I mean, to my point earlier in the session, it's how much you're using artificial intelligence, machine learning, stuff like that in your day-to-day, and you're both using that integral to your company. So, Dan, can you maybe expand a little bit on, so that's one of the sports betting angles, but how is AI ML being used to create further engagement with fans?
Yeah. So first, I'll speak to the AI ML side of the house. So sports is actually uniquely positioned to utilize AI in a pretty powerful way. The AI that we would use, or that many would use, is, you know, it's a like a ChatGPT, like a large language model, where it's basically regurgitating thousands, hundred, you know, millions of articles, and then speaking back to the fan in a way that they expect it to, which is really powerful if you're able to plug in real stats from games that exist either, you know, today, tomorrow, yesterday, whatever it might be. And so we are now creating automated content using real stats from Sport Radar. We are then reading that content. The machines are then reading that content, and inside of it, based on what it says, we're spinning up a poll or a question, and then that poll or question changes depending on how much interaction it gets. And so we're actually tracking the behaviors, the opinions, feeding that data back to the leagues, which now, speaking to the sports betting side of things, can actually inform the operators that are paying a premium for access to these leagues and teams what it is that individuals like to place wagers on, because their opinions are a pretty clear reflection of where they would put their money. And so the system that we're creating, right, and then ultimately, right, if we were to plug into an environment within Venue, we could personalize exactly what that individual wants to bet on, because the next play is so broad. Is it the next pitch? Is it the outcome of the at-bat? Like, what might that be? And I think that level of personalization can and will exist as a result of using what I would consider the very tip of the iceberg on the ML AI side today. And the result will be a hyper-personalized fan experience that isn't about reading the news and knowing that machines read it. It's about reading the news because that news is very personal and interesting and relevant to you.
And so is that where the revenue generation monetization come in, is you just make something so incredibly hyper-personalized, but you do it efficiently, so it's not, the kind of unit economics of it makes sense, and then that can drive revenue. So either, you know, sports betting, jersey sales, whatever else, tickets, just really dialing in on that person.
100%. So if you know exactly what that fan is interested to the level of fan sentiment, which you just do on the back end inside of their CDP or CRM, then you are feeding them a call to action that is so relevant that the conversion rate is actually impacted. How you use that, it's going to be the ticket sales, it's going to be the merchandise, it's going to be the sports betting side of things, but it can and will go broader than that.
We're getting to a world, I've seen some fascinating pitches that some calls I've been on with companies like Roku and Amazon Prime and all these new streaming companies, that we're getting to a world that pretty soon you're going to be able to watch and bet in real time. And what I mean by that is you're going to be able to literally use your Roku remote or your Amazon Fire Stick remote, and watching the game live, you're going to have an overlay on the screen that you don't have to watch a game anymore and then go to your sportsbook app and watch and maybe be 10 seconds behind and place a bet and then look up to see if you just won or lost. You're going to be able to use your remote and literally place a wager of $10 that Aaron Judge hits a home run at this at bat using your remote. And that will take place all on your TV. So we're getting to a world of this watch and bet solution that would all happen in real time.
Well, so interesting on that point. So sports betting in the US is kind of entering its second act or second phase, as I would say, in terms of getting a majority of Americans being able to legally bet. Obviously, you still have Texas and California and, some big states come online, but it's entering that second phase of consolidation. We're seeing that with smaller ones being bought out. I mean, the PointsBet acquisition with Fanatics kind of entering the fray. Do you see what is the next phase? I mean, we're also seeing at the same time the US is continuing to open up and grow with sports betting. You're seeing mature markets like the UK, Australia, where regulation is really clamping down on both advertising, the Premier League banning front of shirt betting sponsors, Australia as well, ramping up their kind of gambling advertising restrictions, things like that. So is the US about to hit that? It's kind of, are we heading for a hangover after the party, or is it still let the good times roll?
I think we're in a really good spot right now. I think you're going to start seeing in this industry a lot more mergers and acquisitions, similar to what we just talked about, with PointsBet struggling a little bit with their U.S. market and someone like Fanatics that has all of the data and the tech and the resources in the world that wants to get in the space, coming in and saying, hey, PointsBet, let's go ahead and merge together, and we're going to go ahead and acquire you because we want to grow and be a top five operator. Look, this space, everyone's trying to catch the top five operators. Frankly, the top three operators. You have FanDuel, DraftKings, Caesars, BetMGM, Barstool's top five. PointsBet was a top 10. But it's we're seeing after the top 10, number 10 to 25, they're all trying to catch the, you know, the top five. And that's really tough to do because those top five have all the money in the world to spend on marketing. And you're starting to see them where they're spending their money. I think they were pushing a lot of these universities, which start getting a pushback quite a bit more, which makes sense, not to push sports betting on these college kids, you know, that are have their mom and dad's credit card. You're starting to see a lot more U.S. integrity companies come in and really watch how this is being regulated. But yeah, I think as an industry as a whole, we're in a good spot right now. I think we're just now experts on crawling, but we still need to learn how to walk and then run.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, we came into this space right at the beginning of it, and like the money that was being spent and the investment that was being made, time, energy, product, money, whatever it might be, was unreal, and it happened very, very quickly, and then kind of, you know, we'll call it kind of like evened off or plateaued a bit, and then enter Web3 and blockchain, but that's a different conversation. And what I think we'll see from here is less of that crazy acquisition investment, which was a really, really big part of that initial push, which makes a ton of sense. And now the investment is going to be in retention. And so the creative ways that operators need to position themselves, either through media companies, the example being like a Barstool, DraftKings is spinning up its own media company, FanDuel's got its own media arm, right? Like we're seeing a lot of that right now. That's going to be a heavy retention play. You see some of the folks that sat on the sidelines and let it all play out. A Bet365 would be an example, who's now starting to gain significant market share. They've got real market share in Ohio. I want to say like 18.5%, like something pretty significant. And so, you know, we are going to come to a place where there are the top five, top seven operators. The investment is going to be in retention. It is going to be a market that is too expensive to enter. And ultimately, you know, the question mark or the challenge or the regulation is probably going to shift more towards iGaming and a little bit less on sports betting, because iGaming is hyper profitable, but it's also historically a bit predatory. And as long as we can figure out, which there are some companies doing a great job of, how to fix the integrity component, specifically around, you know, coaches, athletes, et cetera, then I think sports betting will just be a component of the sports fans' experience in this country, and it'll generate, you know, new revenue streams. It's a different way to participate, and ultimately, if you have a personalized experience and it's reflected in a high quality product, and it's brought to you at the right moment, and it'll be great, and it'll be an addition, not a detraction from what sports is.
Yeah. So, final question before we open up to the audience, and I think kind of marrying together the creative group that are out there, and the art and the science in terms of the creative and the technology is, as you mentioned, these sports betting companies in, you know, to get fans engaged and keep them engaged, that kind of acquisition and retention, are looking at more things around media. And how do you do media? How do you offer your creative things? How do you do that? Is that something that, I guess, technologists, most of us in the room here, need to rethink that and the value of the, I guess, the creative and the way it can bring people in? Because obviously we've just talked about examples of machine learning, AI, that can help with that stuff. But is there, I guess, can that be seen as a really, really unique and powerful tool when combined with the technology?
Yes, it's such, you know, there's some incredibly smart people in that room, and it's really important that they take this challenge on and do a great job with it, because it needs to be woven into the fabric of the content, right? Like it can't be, like what you guys are building at NVenue is an addition to an experience that you're already having, right? It just makes it better. And I think that also needs to be reflected in the media and the creative and the content that leagues, teams, and sports media companies are creating. That's always been our belief, is like you kind of bury this poll into an article, and it can't be some random poll about, you know, something that makes no sense. It's got to be specifically about the article you're reading, because that's what you're connected to and that's what you're thinking about. And so the challenge ultimately becomes, how do you bring these, you know, how do you touch on the loyalty and the emotion and all of the positive things that our sport and that we've known sport for, and then start to weave betting into the conversation in a way that doesn't feel intrusive, but instead feels positive and kind of makes it a better experience.
Yeah. And to the point on, I mean, you were talking about, so judge comes out to bat, it's that statistic, and you say, well, he hasn't hit a home run when it's been this humidity on a Tuesday when it's 65 degrees. I don't know, whatever. Like, well, random stats don't engage. It needs to be part of a narrative. It still needs that creative. You still need to have a narrative that underpins that, so you understand as a journey, and that's part of the, I guess, the creative side coming into all these efficiencies that are created by the technology.
Right, and it's funny that we'll get the your average diehard baseball fan that's been watching baseball for 25 years that now has Apple TV, they're already upset that they had to create a login and they're streaming watching Apple TV, and then they see a probability show up that to them does not make sense, that they're, for an example, if it's a 2-0 count and a strike is thrown and then it goes up to a 3-0 count, they automatically think the probability should jump that a 3-0 count, this next pitch is going to be a fastball down the middle. Sometimes that might drop, and they're like, oh, these guys don't know what they're talking about. This doesn't make sense. Well, it's hard for the outside to really understand of everything that goes into machine learning and AI. I mean, it is not just millions of historical data points that are thrown into our machines. It is up to, what did he do last week? What are his most up and coming? What are the trends? What is his last time he matched up specifically against this pitcher? What is Aaron Judge's stats in an 80-degree weather versus 50-degree weather? What is he like in this venue versus this venue? What is he like after a doubleheader, after a tripleheader, or after a week break? Like, there's so many live data points that is thrown to our into our machines that spits out the real-time probability that is hard for other people to kind of sit back and be like, okay, I get that.
And guess what? When he disagrees with it or she disagrees with it, then they can bet on it, right?
That
and
is
that's,
true.
And that's the business.
Correct.
Yeah, engage in a way that's still engagement. So,
correct.
We will open up to questions.
Comment exactly on that, Jeremy. So let's use Shohei, because he's going to break Aaron Judge's record this year anyway. Wow. So as a he's outpacing him right now, and Judge is hurt. But Shohei is on track. You watch. I am that 25. I've been watching my entire life. I'm a diehard St. Louis Cardinals fan. I'm a diehard Shohei Ohtani fan, and I worked for the New York Yankees. So I watch that Apple TV broadcast. I actually am the one that understands the stats, but I also watch with people that don't fully understand it. Dontrell Willis is the current, like, one of the announcers on that Apple TV broadcast,
yeah,
who has no idea what
no
any
idea
of these things mean.
No idea.
So when, isn't it incumbent, like, if you want more people to engage with this and it becomes successful and this is the wave of the future of engaging with live TV broadcasts for sports, you have to have people in the booth who are more adequately, you know, acceptable at explaining this stuff and understanding it and speaking to it. Otherwise, you're just doing a full disservice across the board. You can't just, you know, clone David Cohn and have him in every booth. Like, you need more people to talk about this.
Could not agree more. So just to give you an idea, Apple TV, this was, they signed a 10-year deal with MLB Network, right? Last year was the first season. They called us, they called MLB Network a week before the season started and say, we're Apple TV, we need to show something innovative on screen. MLB, who do you know? MLB says, we know this company that has real-time predictive analytics called NVenue. You should call them. We were integrated within 2 weeks before the season started. The broadcasters, the Apple TV production knew nothing about what we did. They just wanted to show something new and innovative. They put our real-time predictive analytics on screen. They showed one, I think they showed on-base probability every single time. This season, we have Apple calling us, and they're saying, okay, this went very well. We want to show more. How do we show more? Can you please train our broadcast team? We said, please. We trained the broadcast team. They got a new broadcast team. So they know that they want to get more involved. You'll hear every now and then that they'll mention us. They'll say, you know, our friends over at NVenue, but there's so much more work to be done. We did a couple training sessions with them, so they have a true understanding of what machine learning AI is and where we're getting the stats and the data from. But you're 100% right. There's still so much that we could do with that broadcast team that can talk about it more freely and enlighten the fans of what they're actually seeing. Because people just think it's league averages. It's not. We think we're responsible for it because this is all new, innovative tech, right? All of this is new. So when we do land deals with the sports betting operator, they'll come to us and they'll say, "Hey, how do we show your bets? What are the they're leaving it up to us to provide that, right? We're the experts on machine learning, AI, on micro betting, on real time predictive analytics, but it just goes down to." You know, we a couple people mentioned before this just the time and the effort it takes just to get a deal done and everything. And that's a prime example. We got this deal done with Apple TV, and they were live within a week. They didn't leave us really much time to train them on what they're actually seeing. This next season, you're gonna start seeing quite a bit more. You're gonna start seeing our real time predictive analytics on the pitcher on the left and on the batter on the right. So it tells more of a story. Right now we have markets on pitch speed, pitch type. We've actually had some teams call us that say, "Hey, we saw our stuff on Apple TV. Can we put this on an iPad in the dugout so we get an idea of what the pitcher's going to pitch?" And we're like, "I don't know. Can you?" Like, I don't know.
Us legal. Us legal. Us right. Legal. Stay away from that. Yeah.
No. So it's interesting. Yeah.
Also, to the point earlier, is the ability for customization and personalization, because I think you get some diehard fans that want some of the cleaner version of baseball as they know, and we all know sports fans like that are constantly griping about how the game's changed, and probably just want someone they know from back in the day, just not really talking about the game, just talking about war stories from back in the day. And then you want other people that want, like, it looks like basically a heads-up display you'd have on a fighter pilot jet, you know, like just stats everywhere, you know, overlays, everything like that. So I think that's the next evolution, and what's coming with streaming is the ability to do that. And then the next evolution as well is the ability to do that in venue on your phone, overlays, PGA Tour with a company called Quintar is doing some really interesting stuff like that you can hold up your phone. They'll give you basically what you would get at home with the shot tracker data. So ball speed, spin, where it's going, all that kind of stuff. But definitely that's at the very, very pointy end, and I think that's obviously a challenge, as you were describing, is what do you give to the majority of the audience, and then how do you customize that?
Yeah, there's actually there's a really interesting, NASCAR is doing a really interesting tie-in between potential wager opportunities that they're investing in, right, in the way that people actually watch the sport. So what they started doing last year was the matchup betting, right? So they had never really done matchups before. And we, at least not as like an important or popular bet, and we were promoting that like crazy for them, right? And ultimately what we learned was that nobody understood what a matchup was, so we shifted it to head-to-head, and then all the language changed, right? Head-to-head made a lot more sense. Anyway, back to the streaming component, they're going to, let's say you bet on two drivers that are actually racing each other, it's the race within the race, you'd be able to watch those drivers. So you're actually watching that race as opposed to watching the broad race. That's pretty cool. Like, that's like a very, very cool thing to do, because if not, then you're like looking at all the numbers, they're all jammed up, you're like trying to figure out where anybody is, or you're just watching the leaderboard. Watching the leaderboard's not that interesting or exciting. So that's the kind of stuff that I think betting will push forward. And ultimately, I mean, that's a personalized streaming experience that you have action on that is interesting, exciting, and very, very different for a traditional sport like NASCAR.
And this is why the leagues are so interested themselves. This is why we partnered with the NBA, because they see what we can create and how we could put something like that on League Pass. But they want to have a foot in within sports betting, but also at a distance, because they know what we could create within micro betting that, yes, they're going to participate in the ultimate, in the revenue with all the handle in the NBA, but what this is ultimately doing is just keeping their fans engaged throughout the whole game, right? If the NBA fans can bet on a free throw, or bet who's going to be the next team to score 15, or what's going to happen in this next 2 minutes, that's keeping their fans engaged throughout the whole game, even when there's a blowout. My team's down 15, the NBA is a game of runs, I could still put $10 that the Mavs are going to cut it to 5 by mid-third. So this is keeping the fans engaged throughout the whole game. That's why the leagues are really wanting to be involved with a company like ours, because we can build a product like this that is going to do so.
And also beyond sports betting, the solution may be developing sports betting in mind, and that may be, to the point, monetizing it, and that's how it gets its ROI. But also think about the way that people are consuming sports. It's much more, as you suggested, you know, Ohtani, what was it? Yankees, St. Louis. So there's all kinds of things. Like, you want to be watching the game of the team you follow, but also your favorite athlete is playing in a different game. Can you do something that's beyond just a pitcher-in-pitcher? Or a lot of sports fans were quite annoyed when they were watching one broadcast and then they cut to, well, is he gonna break the record? It's like, that's the opposite of personalization, is just hammering people with whatever message you want to send, rather than giving them the ability to engage with little bits of the game, personalities, games within the game, kind of all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the Action Network did a really good job of it in the early days of sports betting. I don't know if you remember that, but you could directly connect your sportsbook account to their tracker, basically. And instead of having to go through ESPN and see if your team was winning, go back, look at the line, and see what you got it at and all that, it was literally just green, red, or yellow. and it showed you whether you were winning and what the percentage was. Like, that, to me, was actually one of the best personalization experiences I've had around sports betting.
Right. Any other questions?
So, how do you maintain the, integrity, and do you foresee any regulations coming up? I guess, for example, where my mind was going is, you're presenting real-time predictive analytics, and then you're even giving them an option to pick which one they want to display on the screen. I'm sure out of one of those options, one can get more money and generate more money from the viewers and from whoever is using this. How do you maintain integrity, and do you foresee any regulations in this space?
Yeah, it's funny. We were actually just talking about this. In Australia, it's actually micro betting is banned as of right now. They see it kind of a slot machines of sport betting, you know, $5 here, $5 here, $5 here, betting on every single pitch. We're getting ahead of it in the U.S. And partnering with a company called U.S. Integrity that has eyes on basically everything. So that is on the forefront of us. But what we built on the back end, that we give control to our sports betting operators, and something that we can manage, of bet limits. So micro betting, you're not going to see $1,000 here, $2,000 here, $5,000 here. You're going to see $5, $10, $15. And within that, we have bet limits of, you know, most of the time it's a bet limit of $100 to $200. And the sports betting industry is doing a good job. And you can't bet money you don't have. You can't put a credit card on file and go gamble $20,000 away, money you don't have. You have to take money from your account to put it on. So we are being responsible and partnering with companies like US Integrity to really watch out for that.
Good restrictions from, like, the user side, like not letting the user bet too much money or go broke. But what about from the people who are actually operating? I guess, are there any regulations on what they can do? Because, I just foresee them being able to kind of, I know if I maybe get the wrong analytic, I'm going to get people to bet more and then make more money out of it. Is there any regulations coming from that side as well?
TBD on that, because we're in the middle of our first integrations right now, giving the operators that full responsibility. But I understand and I see your question for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the trust that I just can't foresee any team or league doing something like that, just because of the immense risk. Like, I just
it's not worth it.
Like, it's not worth it.
There's
it's
no
not,
way to justify
it's definitely
it.
Not worth it.
I have one more. So you guys spent a lot of time talking about the fan at home engaging in this in real time, but knowing that all of these venues are opening up sports books at the venue itself, right? Wrigley now has one, Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse has one. Like, how do you foresee fans that are at the game engaging in this real time element as well, without totally distracting from the actual on-court product?
That's a good question. I think what we're seeing is it's a totally different world. When we were talking with the NBA a while ago, they wanted their fans to have eyes on the court, right? It's starting to, let's see what we can do with, hey, let's put a big QR code on the jumbo screen and say, this is where sponsorship opportunity revenues come in, right? You scan the QR code and participate in the race to 15. If you get the race to 15 right, then you get a free fries at the end of the game, right? So there's multiple revenue generating opportunities with this. At first, it was mostly for the fans sitting at home, but we are starting to see more of in-venue. It's our company, NVenue, not InVenue, but we are starting to see a lot more opportunities for the fans actually sitting in seat watching the game. I actually heard something so interesting the other day that a NBA team was thinking about doing a $1 billion renovation and putting an iPad in the back of everyone's seat. So you're sitting there watching the game and you can put in a debit card or you could deposit $20, and while you're sitting there live, you are betting in real time on the iPad in front of you while watching the game. So there's a lot of creative ideas coming out there.
So in a, yeah, I mean, you're definitely going to see the in-game wager from the phone. And I've done it, right? Like I've done it in New York. I've sat in a Nets game. and it's kind of fun, right? It does make it a little bit more interesting depending on where the game is. One thing that we did which was really interesting was during a WNBA game. So we were working with the Chicago Sky and we threw up QR codes, passed them out. Like we got something like 30% of the audience there to scan and sign up, and they gave us their phone number. And we ran like an SMS contest during the breaks. Right. So it wasn't wagering. Those were real time questions. We were pulling in data and, will the Sky come back? They're down 7, 86% of the time they end up, tied in the third quarter, that sort of stuff. And I mean, the engagement we got was insane. 86% of the people answered the last question, which is like, I mean, that's unheard of. So it does actually, if you think about it that way, encourage people to watch the product in a more intimate way, as opposed to like going out and getting food, talking to their buddy, hanging out on their phone, just taking pictures, whatever it might be. So there is a way to make it, support the product.
Yeah, I think I'm just curious too, like the physical spaces that have these sports, like these, the arenas that have the physical sports books inside their arena, like all the renovations that you're talking about, all of these, even Barclays Center has talked about opening up a space that is dedicated to a sports book in the venue. And I've always just thought that like that's a really interesting thing, because yes, it could be open not during game time, which would help and would drive traffic and people would be, participating in it. But during the game, I think I would be concerned about people wanting to spend all of their time there focusing. You'd have the TVs on watching the game, but like it would be distract from the being in your seat.
I'd actually like to see some of the data at the end of this year, specifically from like the Reds, right? Like, because my take on it is it's more like a sports book in a casino, where it's a place to spend $18 on a drink and to buy very expensive food and to maybe get away from the action. And it's less like the last thing I want to do is get a physical ticket of a bet that I make. Like, that's like the last thing I want to do. And so I don't know that it's really going to be a generator of that type of revenue. And I wonder if it's more of like just like a cool, expensive place to hang out. Maybe an education center.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it'll come down to each team as well. So some of those spaces and seeing what those spaces are like, say internationally, where it's mobile forward betting, is that you have areas that are, you can watch the game and you're away from it and you can bet on your phone and you're there, but they're very purposefully put away. You can't see. If you want to go see the action live and be amongst it, you need to go sit in your seat. So it'd be interesting to see how those ones, and it's evolving. It's those betting spaces that aren't even like purpose-built sports books. I know Austin FC, where I am, Austin, Texas, PointsBet have a space there that as soon as it goes live and they get a license, there you go, that's a space. Exactly. So that's, I think it would be team-specific. And then there's some teams that go, no, we want everyone in our seats. We don't want people on phones. I mean, Ballmer with the Clippers has talked about that. He hates that. He wants people, everyone watching it. And there's other ones that go, no, bring out your phone. However you're engaged, however you're into it, go for it.
I mean, he's installing hardware in all the seats where you're going to like press buttons to engage with the screen, which to me is like a little mind-boggling. By the time the thing's done, like, is that hardware outdated? Yes or no? Like, it's easier to probably put a screen up, but
I think he's good for it. I think he's probably afford it, but yeah, I think it's a wait and see for everyone.
Good question.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the questions as well. Great discussion.